From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, October 28th, 2025. Maine and two dozen other states are suing the Trump administration in an attempt to have federal food assistance benefits released next month in the midst of a government shutdown. The complaint filed in federal district court in Massachusetts alleges that the suspension of Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits is illegal. The attorneys general say the Department of Agriculture has access to billions of dollars in contingency funds and can use them to pay for the November benefits. USDA says it cannot use those contingency funds. The complaint argues that because states are responsible for administering the federal food assistance program, suspending SNAP benefits is a violation of the Administrative Procedure Act. The attorneys general say they will also seek a temporary restraining order, asking that the court immediately release upcoming SNAP benefits. Meantime, local businesses are stepping up across Maine to provide food and supplies for people who will go without those benefits in November due to the government shutdown. Nearly 170,000 Mainers are enrolled in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which provides, on average, $572 per family every month. Sam's Italian Foods, which has multiple locations in the Lewiston-Auburn area, plans to give away pizzas to SNAP families with children. Store manager Tricia Cottrell says she sees the generosity spreading to other businesses.
I opened my Facebook this morning and I saw that Just in Time is doing something. Nutty Nettie's Cafe is also doing something. So I think it's really great that the community as a whole, we're all pitching in to do what we can to help ease some burdens on families.
More than a third of SNAP households include children, according to state data. The federal government has been shut down since October 1st. Those who need additional resources are encouraged to call 211. Operators of the Juniper Ridge landfill in Old Town are moving forward with plans to treat the landfill leachate for PFAS. But advocates say it's not a justification for expanding the facility. State environmental regulators are requiring some form of PFAS treatment system as part of approvals to expand Juniper Ridge. Nora Bosworth with the Conservation Law Foundation says the leachate should be treated, but no system will do enough to address the broader pollution concerns for the Penobscot River and surrounding communities.
There's no world in which this expansion could be said to be consistent with environmental justice, because there's no world in which any treatment system, regardless of the technology, could completely do away with the added toxics that are going to go into the river and into the air and into the soil and into the bodies living near Juniper Ridge.
A spokesperson for Casella Waste Systems, which operates Juniper Ridge, says the company has never had compliance issues for operations at the landfill and that Juniper Ridge is a vital resource in Maine's waste management system. The Houlton Town Council has agreed to remove controversial surveillance cameras in town and delete data from them as part of a settlement agreement with several residents who were preparing to file a lawsuit. One resident, Mark Lipscomb, says the cameras have been in clear violation of Maine law and that the agreement brings the town into compliance. Lipscomb says the agreement also requires a third-party audit to ensure the town deletes some of the data and maintain some for public access requests.
But it shouldn't be like this. We should be able to expect our town to operate within the parameters of the law, and anyone can make mistakes. But when it was identified, it should have been addressed immediately, and we wouldn't be where we are today.
Lipscomb says the residents have always hoped to resolve the issue out of court, but until now, the town refused to enter negotiations. Town officials cannot be reached for comment. Maine's immigrant population is, on the whole, relatively stable and well-integrated. That's the conclusion of a new report by the Migration Policy Institute, a national nonpartisan think tank. It found that nearly 75% of immigrants in Maine are either green card holders or naturalized citizens, and about half have lived in the state for 20 years or more. But the report's author, Valerie Licart, says more recent arrivals, mostly from Africa and Latin America, have faced greater struggles with housing and transportation.
That has been perhaps the most visible aspect of the immigrant community in Maine, but it's not what is representative of the overall immigrant community.
Licart says the Institute focused on Maine as an example of what integration looks like in a state with a relatively small immigrant community. According to the Maine Department of Transportation, there are about 170 crashes on Maine roads each year involving bicycles. These can be traumatic, life-altering events that result in serious injuries, legal battles, and lingering feelings of blame and anger. But one accident in Yarmouth nearly 3 years ago took a different turn when the victim chose to seek a more meaningful outcome. Patty White has the story.
On a clear December day in 2022, Kevin Curdy of Yarmouth drove to the Dunkin' Donuts on Route 1 just like he did almost every morning. He picked up a coffee for himself and one for his wife and drove home.
About a week later, we went to a grandkids' basketball game in Saco. So we come out, big dent in the side of my car, perfectly round. Someone's hit it with a basketball.
At least, that's what Curdy guessed when he saw a dent on the driver's side of the car near the back. But not long after, a police officer showed up at Curdy's house.
He said, "Did you have an incident at Dunkin' Donuts?" I said, "No, I don't go in." I thought he meant I got in an argument or a fight in there or something. I said, "I just go through the drive-thru." He says, "Well, I got to show you something."
The officer held up his phone and played a video taken by a bystander. It showed Curdy's car rolling through the stop sign at the Dunkin' Donuts, colliding with a bicyclist, then driving away.
And I'm like, "Is he okay?" I said, What happened? This can't be my car."
I was beside myself.
Curdy's wife, Mary Ellen Lassard.
Because I thought, how could, you know, honestly, I thought if I hit somebody, I'd know it.
Yeah.
But Kevin didn't. He didn't realize it.
I do a lot of bicycle and pedestrian cases, and that's one of the most common refrains is, "I just didn't even know they were there."
Lori Boxer Macomber is a Portland-based attorney.
And it's not because the person wasn't conspicuous, because a lot of times my clients are in high-visibility clothing. They're lit up like Christmas trees, or they have reflective devices all over them on their bicycles, but people miss them because I think their brains are looking for cars and not people.
Boxer Macomber says these crashes can leave lasting scars, both physically and emotionally, as it did for her client in this case, Steve Brown of Freeport.
Your whole life can change in 1 second.
The collision left Brown hospitalized for 2 weeks. He required surgery for a broken femur, then another surgery 6 months later in Boston. His physical therapy continues. Once an avid cyclist who rode thousands of miles a year, Brown says it extinguished his passion for biking.
It used to be my health plan. It was how I could stay moderately healthy.
About a year and a half after the crash, a grand jury indicted Curdy on felony criminal charges for reckless conduct with a dangerous weapon, driving to endanger, and leaving the scene of an accident. Brown says he wanted the driver to be held accountable, but something about the pending prosecution just didn't sit quite right with him.
I cringed because it's such a powerful thing. And I just put myself in his shoes and thought, wow, he must be struggling with that.
Brown says he told his attorney that he wanted to raise awareness to prevent future bicycle crashes, and a criminal conviction and potential jail time for Curdy really wouldn't do that. So she suggested something else that might.
Restorative justice.
It's an approach, says Boxer Macomber, that brings the victims and perpetrators of a crime together to try to find a meaningful resolution in conjunction with a criminal case.
When two people are able to reach some type of a meaningful solution to a problem together, they're both empowered, and we have more people walking around the world feeling like what they do matters versus feeling defeated by a system.
Restorative justice isn't a new concept, but Cumberland County District Attorney Jackie Sartoris says it's often misunderstood.
That's, you know, mamby-pamby, woo-woo stuff, where we're not really holding people accountable. And that is not the way that restorative justice is supposed to be used. Restorative justice should be used so that the person is the most accountable they can be, which is to the person they harmed.
Brown and Curdy agreed to try restorative justice, and last November, nearly 2 years after the crash, they met for the first time in Brown's attorney's office. Curdy says he was nervous.
My lawyer said to me, this guy's going to be ugly. He's going to be mad as hell at you. So when you go in, just stay calm and everything. I walk in, who stands up, smile on his face, sticks his hand out. Just wanted to talk to you. He said, all this time, I just wanted to talk to you. I says, oh, what kind of a nice man is this man right here? So it just calmed me right down. I was fine after that.
Guided by a facilitator, Brown says he and Curdy weren't treated as adversaries, but as two people who both needed to heal.
People have no idea how powerful it is when someone says, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. That's the essence. Honest, truthful apologies and forgiveness. There's possibly very little more potent than that in the whole universe.
After two meetings, they decided, along with prosecutors, that Curdy would plead guilty to a misdemeanor charge of failure to yield. Instead of a fine, he'd donate $500 to the Bicycle Coalition of Maine.
Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
At Curdy's court hearing, Brown made a statement to the judge about the emotional toll of the crash. This is the courtroom audio.
Now I have no desire to ride. The trauma of a possible repeat is always present. It took away my joy of riding and a sense of safety on Maine public roadways.
But, Brown said, locking people up doesn't make victims like him whole.
What does make people in my situation whole are getting folks to acknowledge harms that result from distracted driving, from feeling compassion for those involved in trauma of this nature, and changing their behavior.
As part of the agreement, Brown and Curdy also decided to share their story outside the courtroom, a story that began in one agonizing moment 3 years ago.
And yet, here we are, we're talking to each other, we feel good about each other.
The funny part is, did you ever think, I didn't know you, you didn't know me, and now we're friends. I feel we're friends.
It's a reminder, Brown says, to slow down, pay attention, and treat others with understanding and empathy, both on the road and off. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Since July, Cumberland County District Attorney Jackie Sartoris says more than 65 misdemeanor cases are being addressed through restorative justice. Typically, these are for crimes such as shoplifting, where there's no direct victim. She says defendants meet with a community surrogate trained by the nonprofit Cumberland County Friends of Restorative Justice.
Letting that defendant interact with a surrogate is our way of humanizing what they've done and saying, look, there is an impact here to people. It is not just some, you know, nameless big box store. There is an impact to people.
Sartoris says the goal is to change behavior, reduce recidivism, and to achieve better results for victims. Participation is voluntary and defendants must pay a $150 fee. She says restorative justice continues to be recommended in some felony cases where defendants and direct victims have more intensive meetings. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, deer hunting. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.